This is AENN, American Exceptionalism News Network.
Protestations of Obama himself in his speech to the children in Northern Ireland about peace. When he said, those who choose a path of peace, I promise you that the United States of America will support you every step of the way. We will be the wind at your back. Now I ask you, is this person going for the Hypocrite of the Century Award? Because we have to call things by their right names. And the reality is that by any serious examination, this man is a war criminal.
2-1-1-0.
I know some people want me to bypass Congress and change the laws on my own.
It is the agenda for the 21st century you're living in today. For a brave new world where everything that you cherished and held true will no longer exist.
The original Constitution, I think it is an imperfect document, and I think it is a document that reflects some deep flaws.
And that would authorize him to use the military to arrest people in the United States who, in the president's opinion, are enemies of the country.
You'll find that they've also asked for the right to imprison farmers who wouldn't keep books as prescribed by the federal government. The Secretary of Agriculture asked for the right to seize farms through condemnation and resell them to other individuals. And contained in that same program was a provision that would have allowed the federal government to remove 2 million farmers from the soil.
These government Republicans and Democrats were busy shredding the last vestiges of the Constitution. They're talking about inserting the army into domestic law enforcement. The homeland is part of the battlefield, and people can be held without trial, whether an American citizen or not.
I have been often to, the mothership in New York City, but it's good to have an outpost of the council right here down the street from the State Department. We get a lot of advice from the council, so this will mean I won't have this far to go to be told what we should be doing and how we should think about the future.
Take off the tinfoil hat and put on the Kevlar. It's time for battle with Paul Preston and the Agenda 21 Show.
Well, hello and welcome to Agenda 21 Radio. This is the radio show that is stopping totalitarianism one exceptional American at a time. And yes, ladies and gentlemen, you have to ask yourself that question. Are you that exceptional American that I'm talking about? Of course you are. That's why you're listening to this radio show. Just sort of to answer the question for you. So welcome aboard. A lot of things going on in the 24/7, 365 news cycle. And you are absolutely in the midst of the cycle. Lots of things, like I said, going on. Will there be a State of the Union or not? Well, I have a feeling there's going to be a State of the Union. Like it or not, Nancy Pelosi. We have a whole bunch of other things going on. But first, I want to bring on with us here our very own Chris Street, because we have a breaking news article that I think is of incredible merit. Chris, California is set to seize 1,100 miles of coastline in California.
And guess who they will be seizing it from, Paul? The progressives who thought they could be the useful idiots and avoid actually living the social anarchist dreams of their fellow travelers.
You know, I hate it when this happens.
I love that when you say that, Paul, because it's just so poetic, isn't it? Now, let me tell you what's going to happen. The California Coastal Commission has issued draft regulations that will start what are called, local coastal programs for the managed retreat of coastline properties in under attack from climate change and the rise of sea levels.
Under attack. Tora, Tora, Tora. Say something about being under attack. It's just absolutely the managed retreat.
Managed retreat. And managed retreat is one of those, kind of nice words that means we really need to take your property, Mr. Homeowner, along the coast. You know, Al Gore, Oprah, and Barbara Streisand need to do the right thing and sell their property to their local government. But we all know that the local government probably is broke as a joke. So the nuke, in order to make this viable, the new regulations will allow local jurisdictions. I always love that word jurisdictions, not cities or counties. You know, these can be, you know, regional governments and things like that. You know, people that don't get voted on, but they have the right to take your property and then turn around and re-rent it as a profit center for the local jurisdiction. Now, as soon as these regs come out, you can, not only is it going to be a problem for these homeowners thinking about something in the future, but this is going to be engraved on the deed for their property as a risk. And the moment this is engraved on the deed as the property, once it's recorded at the county recorder, all of a sudden those properties are going to drop like a stone, because you'll never be able to improve your house. You'll never be able to sell it to somebody else who knows that it can be taken tomorrow. So what's going to happen here is these properties are going to crash in value. The cities are going to take it. There's going to be no bid. And, of course, that's the way it works in eminent domain. Don't you love that word, Paul? Eminent domain, as in it's eminently mine.
So this is a really communism at its finest, so to speak.
No, social anarchy, Paul.
Well, okay, we're just a half a step away from communism.
You know, we have the right to own everything else. And you can't just own a property where you might want to live.
Right.
You need to own a property where we say you should live, because that's what this really is. It's a local coastal program.
So the homeowner, by way of either selling the property, buying the property, basically gives it up to the state at whatever price they want to give you.
No, whatever the market bid is at the time, knowing that anybody that buys that house can be taken tomorrow under the same conditions. So it's probably worse than normal compensation. Normal compensation, they're supposed to pay you the value of the land. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's what all this stuff with the train in the valley was about. You know, the train people came along and said, you need to sell us that land as, you know, useless property. And the dairy farmer said, that's going right down the middle of my farm, separating my cows. It's a place that I grow, alfalfa or something in. You know, that's key to my farm. And they go, no, it's not. It's, you know, useless property with no actual use. And that's what the fights have been about. Eminent domain is the greatest scam government ever came up with.
So I guess the big question is, how do people stop this? I mean, I know that New California is the stopping mechanism. But
well, Paul, before we get into that, let's talk about just how big a deal this is going to be.
Well, 1,100 miles of California prime coastal land, ladies and gentlemen.
But it's not just taking the fringe property.
No, it's
going to take anything that's adjacent to the property, including 250 miles of highway, 1,500 miles of road, 110 miles of railways, and obviously just thousands and thousands of homes. Now, this is the sea rise that they're going to justify this with, between 2.5 and 5.5 feet. We're not talking inches, like, you know, maybe there's been an inch over the last century. We're talking 2.5 to 5.5 feet. Imagine that, Paul.
Well, you know, and again, this isn't inches, like you said, because in some places the predictions for their predictions, which are not my predictions or anybody, I think, any reasonable science person would understand. They were talking maybe a 6-inch at the max, which would inundate large portions of the coastal areas all around the United States and the world. But now you're talking about feet.
Oh, of course.
This is get the mountain level.
Be realistic here. 2.5 to 5.5 feet.
Right.
I mean, so this is an order of magnitude. I think the highest they were originally talking about was 4 inches. And, you know, that was, you know, a couple islands would get it. You know, you'd have to build a higher seawall. And by the way, there's another aspect of this that you've got to be careful of, Paul, because they're predicting that about 31 to 67% of the beaches in Southern California will be gone by 2100. And to protect the local flora and fauna from what's called coastal squeeze. Have you heard of coastal squeeze?
I have, actually. I've heard of coastal squeeze,
okay.
Yes.
Coastal squeeze says that you must condemn and take homes and businesses to protect the shoreline from wildlife, and you cannot use retaining walls to artificially impact social squeeze, as you have a landward migration of beach that would have otherwise occurred. This is a dramatic change in the way we use property.
So the question, obviously this is part of the rewilding project. It's got to be, because the Coastal Commission has got to be in communication with the California Department of Fish and Wildlife. Those two are working together.
They're worried about interior squeeze, right? I mean, these are really great. These are really great concepts that you now have the most progressive legislature and governor in the history of California, and you're going to live the dream. Now, from a strategic standpoint, you know, Paul, I was not interested in getting involved in New California before September, when I could actually see this type of stuff coming. You're now on what I call, you know, alert, where that big pink spot in the sky is getting bigger and bigger, you know, and the progressive, you know, dinosaurs are doing their last mating call. I mean, you're going to have a hit with this thing. This is so aggressive that it's actually going to attack the people that gave them the money to take power. It's great. Progressives being rich, progressive limousine liberals being attacked by the minions they thought they could control.
Well, you know, and so if you're thinking about, or if they're thinking about this coastal squeeze business and all the stuff that goes along with it, you're talking about an incursion of water that would go all the way and cover the valley of Southern California, the San Fernando Valley.
In the 1860s, there was a time when there was 6 feet of standing water in the Central Valley.
Right.
And the military said that there will never be farming in California again, because so many people were, you know, so many people drowned and it was so dangerous. And, you know, it's an El Nino. And after a while, it goes away. And, you know, when you build infrastructure, it goes away in a managed way that you actually bank water and you do such like that. But all of these philosophies that started really with Jerry Brown in the 70s, the idea that we can't stop infrastructure unless we have a victim, and, you know, you make the snail darter, an artificially introduced fish that came in the bilges of ships. That's how it got here. That all of a sudden it had rights against squeeze. I mean, it's really amazing that animals have more rights than humans.
Yeah, and of course, this has been the stuff that the indoctrination of Jerry Brown back in the... And that's really, I can think back when I was teaching biological sciences and environmental sciences at the same time in the 70s, when he was coming out, or they were coming out, and the state was coming out with these sorts of things. And of course, you did have the Coastal Commission then, I think, even by then. I was wondering about what in the world is, and that's when we kind of all, you know, departed ways with Jerry Brown, his logic and his thinking. Certainly by 1980, people had given up that whole wacko environmentalism. And at the time, ladies and gentlemen, it wasn't global warming, it was global cooling. There was supposed to be
another ice
age.
All of this was being done in the name of global cooling.
Right.
You were going
to
freeze to death. They had to take control.
That's right. So if you take a look at Southern California, you have water that's going to go all the way up into the valley of Southern California for sure, and then also in the Central Valley of California, it's going to flood, right? I mean, the whole valley will be flooded.
Well, what is the tide line, Paul? Is it when you have a surge of water coming in. You know, this happens from time to time. Right. You have really high tides.
Tidal zones.
Or is it the median tide, or is it the low tide? You know, under the new definitions, it's any tide that could possibly happen, and a guesstimate that you're going to have 2.5 to 5.5 feet of sea rise. I mean, these are really spectacular numbers multiplied by the idea that you'd have tidal surge.
Yeah, and you know, there's the typical tidal zone, which, you know, Chris, you know, I've been around here for a long time, and they've been talking about how there's going to be so much loss of land and so on by the sea's encroachment. You know, I haven't seen it in my lifetime, and I've been out on the ocean, Pacific Ocean, since the 1950s. Yeah, I haven't seen it.
You have you obviously are incompetent because you actually have a degree in biology and have done research, Paul.
Done a little bit.
You've got to understand that this is for the greater good. And really, if you're a conservative listener and you don't happen to be, you know, Oprah's neighbor, you know, you don't happen to own a $27 million house on the coast, you've got to really sort of marvel at how she is going to have to deal with this. Because these people mean business. This is their greatest opportunity to take, and they, you know, it's good pickings out there, and they're going to go for it all the way. I understand you're going to put up a lawyer if you have a piece of property and fight it, but good luck to that. They're going to have they can just take your deed and so destroy the value of your house and make sure that you can never, ever get a permit, that you're just in meltdown. And the best part about it, Paul, is, you know, it's going to be the tippy-toppies, you know, those people that make the most money and are the richest that are going to be bashed by this. This is really beautiful stuff. And, of course, once the tippy-toppies get bashed, who thought they were, you know, could do this in a way to, you know, get everything they wanted, once they get bashed, they're going to flip the script and come for New California. And, you know, if we would like to make sure they don't lose their house, right?
Absolutely.
You got to, you know, you play for the wrong team, you're going to lose.
Yeah.
So you watch how this all flips the script. And I think it's, you know, I understand we have a convention on the 26th. Is that correct?
That's correct. Yeah.
In Roseville, right?
It's Roseville, California, the 26th.
Now, this article is up in American Thinker right now. So, if, you know, I encourage people to actually read the entire article because I put a tremendous amount of work in. It says California set to seize 1,100 miles of coastline. And when you know, this is almost as if you're playing the fife and drum song from Yankee Doodle to march the money away from the left and over to more rational thought. The tippy toppy is going to be victimized in this. That's the beauty of it.
You know, it just absolutely amazes me how the flip of the script here is going to work in New California's benefit, because we've always said that, you know, one of the big targets that we're going to have, of course, is the Coastal Commission and California Air Resources Board and so on, which has been so destructive. You know, this is their final grasp at the straws, so to speak, and no pun intended about the sale, you know, people offering you straws in a restaurant. But this is, I think, one of the final straws, because this will affect all those coastal elites. And, you know, it's kind of interesting. We've had inquiries from such places as Malibu because of the fire down there, which lends a lot of credence as to why the fires in certain coastal areas have been happening, to this whole thing that they've been burning us out or burning people out of
urban
the coastal areas.
Urban
renewal, right. There you go. Following the course of the high-speed rail, and now we understand the coastal areas of California are completely at risk by the Coastal Commission. 1,100 miles. And of course, the other thing, too, you bring up, Chris, which is really important right now as we're seeing it, is this El Nino that we're having right now in California, which is, I guess, supposed to stop the drought in some way.
Well, actually, California had more rain in the first 2 days of this storm than they did last year. I mean, I understand California has about 13, 14 inches of rain a year, but, you know, that's the average. Sometimes it's 4 and sometimes it's 30. You know, this one could really be a problem You know, I was talking about El Nino in December, and everybody's, oh, no, it didn't going to happen. See, it hadn't happened. You're wrong. Well, there was a giant high-pressure ridge off of the state of California, and what that actually does is it stacks up storms. It's worse because once that high pressure dissipated and a low came in, all of those storms now are getting sucked in. So you're going to do this through mid-February. I mean, right now it might be manageable. I mean, you're talking about having 4 to 7 feet of snow in the next, I believe, from midnight to, you know, the middle of Friday, 4 to 7 feet of snow in the Sierra Nevadas. It'll clear up a little bit and dry up a little bit. Then you got a little bit of rain next week, and then you've got two more storms. But, you know, you've basically got the vacuum now with the low pressure zone. The low pressure zone is going to suck these Pineapple Expresses in. And there's really nobody that's very good at predicting the size of these things other than the word big.
But I've been in the Sierras when we've seen these 7 foot and 8 foot dumps of snow in one night, by the way.
And this is wet snow. This is really dangerous. This kills people.
This is the concrete, California concrete that they talk
about.
It comes
down wet and cold, and then it turns to concrete. You know, you're going to have a lot of, and they're also going to have a lot of avalanches. I mean, the whole thing's going to be just, you know, kind of epic. But, you know, people who live in the mountains actually understand epic. They prepare for it, sometimes not enough, but the difference in this epic, you know, El Nino is that you have these morons who changed the forest treatment, and now you've got these areas that can burn at massive speed after fire areas, and it just the water comes in and just rushes down these burned areas at a speed that's really frightening.
Right. You know, that's the whole thing. And Jerry Brown and his ilk and his kind over the last several years have been neglecting forest management and the clearing of various forests in chaparral area, and created this high density burning situation that you have in California, which has led to
the mass destruction.
It's a weapon of mass destruction just on its own. And then you have all the other manipulations of weather patterns and so on that we've seen. This is, I think, Chris, going to be a major turning point, especially as the elites, the coastal elites, realize they're being screwed.
Can we say that on TV, TV and radio?
Yes, we just did.
It's kind of like Ding Dong, the Witch is Dead, right?
Right.
You know, I need some Lilliputians to run a ding dong, the witch is dead, the witch is dead. This is really a beautiful situation. I feel sorry for you if you were a person along the coastline, but if you thought you could just ignore, you know, this Marxist trend, if you thought you could just, you know, keep out of it, I got news for you. You know, first they come from those other people, and then they come for you.
Right.
So it's time to mobilize. If you are not making a contribution to New California, why? I mean, if you pay insurance every year, why aren't you making a contribution? Go online. They take your money when you give it to them, and I guarantee you they pay no salaries. It only goes to the cause, and this thing is exploding and is going to be, you know, a real trend. The Republicans, you know, which to a great degree were, you know, the useful idiots, you know, they're pretty much gone. They made themselves worthless. It's kind of like the Whigs that went away in 1848. They were the largest party. Right. And then the 1848 election, they got stomped. And by 1852, the whole party was gone. So, you know, the Republicans have been nothing but the Whigs in California. There are good Republicans. There are plenty of people that work really, really hard. But let's face it, the party itself was bought and paid for, and they somehow thought, you know, if we're going to be, you know, nicer and, you know, more understanding Marxist than the Marxist on the other side.
Well, it's interesting you bring that up because the California Republican Party in particular is really struggling for some sort of identity at this point in time, because everything has been taken away from them.
Well, they never, don't want to adopt the policies that the people want. That's the problem.
Right, right.
They're unwilling to take the risk of the will of the people. They're afraid they'll be battered by social media. They're afraid that that somebody's going to out them for something they did in the past. They're afraid that their kids will be harassed at school. I mean, they're going to get harassed at school, and your past is going to come out. These people hate you. they don't hate you a little bit. They want to destroy you. They really think that this is, Petrograd in 1917.
Yeah, this is the thing, is that we've been trying to tell people that have been engaging in the in with these folks, with the monoparty system and in all the aligned causes that they're into. They're going to be wiped out. They're going to be taken out. And this is just proof of it. They're just doing it in a different way.
Come on, Paul. They could win. They could win. I mean, if you sit back and just say, nah, this can't happen. I mean, there's a lot of history in places. The richest country in South America was Venezuela. The richest country.
Right. Look
poor
at it now.
Poor people were the richest poor people in South America. Look at it now.
Yeah. Well, and that's where California's headed. Of course, we're going to stop it. Chris, I wanted to ask you also about the Coastal Commission. And who are these people? I mean, to the common person, nobody really understands who the Coastal Commission is.
Well, the Coastal Commission supposedly is regional government, super regional government, that doesn't represent necessarily counties or cities, or they represent a area, a jurisdiction, and they're appointed by the legislature. Now, needless to say, they meet, they have their own consultants, they have their own budget, but more importantly, they have the right to set land use policies in the coastal zone. How far is the coastal zone go? It actually goes all the way to Riverside. Because, supposedly, back in prehistoric times, the oceans went in, right? So this impact of coastal ability to impact the coast is pretty, this thing has been on the move.
Right, right. It's been, and again, Riverside, California, Southern California, and it goes all the way to the Salton Sea in that area. And
haven't got there yet, but they will.
Oh, yeah. But, if you just take a look at the creep, if the water was to rise at that level, it's going to rise, Baja California. You're going to have Baja California will become an island probably unto itself, just exactly like the original maps of the Spaniards put forward about California and Alta California.
Right.
California was an island. That's what they thought. So it's the same sort of thing, because all that water coming up through Baja California makes Baja just an island.
Right. Well, but, it's, and the best part about this is it doesn't have to actually show up. You are going to have managed retreat in anticipation. Now, I always love politicians that can do things in anticipation, right? That you create a crisis, with some obviously really, really dicey details. I mean, one of the most interesting details is, they're talking about the oceans are warming, but they had the, I forget what the name of the ship back in the English survey back in the 1800s, where they actually dropped lines down and took temperature tests over a mile down.
Right.
HMS. Oh, it's famous. I'm gonna get a bad junior high school grade here,
no, you won't.
Comparing those temperatures, actually, the Pacific Ocean has been cooling. Now, I understand that the Atlantic Ocean has been warming, but normally, what makes a ocean warm is that it went through a cold cycle. About 500-600 years ago. It takes that much time for it to upwell in the ocean. And we know that there was a, freezing cycle. I think it lasted for almost 150 years, didn't it, Paul, in the 1700s?
Yeah, exactly.
It's one of the reasons people came to the New World because they were dying and starving. You know, it's really a it's more than a detail when you have crop failure from cold weather.
Was it the Bounty? Wasn't the Bounty?
It's not the Bounty. It's HMS. It's another one. It's another. You see, we're both failing.
We are. How about Beagle?
Pardon?
How about Beagle?
It is the Beagle. That's the one.
Okay.
HMS Beagle. That's right.
All right. Well, thanks for my Yahoo search here.
All right, you got me going there. I wasn't cheating, Paul. But
no,
you
know, I know. No.
Make sure you have that on your wrist the next time you're in junior high school.
Well, the next was going to be the Pinafore, HMS Pinafore.
Yeah. Well, anyway, back, you know, this was done with, you know, with mercury thermometers, and you get a little displacement of, you know, the shape and the impact of mercury thermometers. But even adjusting for those issues, it still shows that the Pacific Ocean is cooling because there must have been a hot cycle. You know, and of course, there wasn't much, you know, in 1300 to 1600, you really didn't have much in the way of temperature management or discovery in the Pacific region. But it takes 500 years for this to essentially move through the oceans. So if you had a cold era, which we know you had from histories of Europe in the 1500s to 1700s, you know, that's just starting to play out now in the Atlantic.
Well, you know, the thing about the Beagle, which is kind of interesting, and this is the one that the first trip that they took around the world was really not too much notable, other than the second voyage of the Beagle is notable for carrying the recently graduated naturalist Charles Darwin around the world.
Right.
And while the survey work was carried out, Darwin traveled and researched geology, natural history, and ethnology on shore, and he gained fame by publishing his diary, a journal best known as The Voyage of the Beagle, and his findings played a role, of course, in his formation about evolution. And that, but that was the HMS Beagle. It was laid down June 1818, and it was broken up in 1870. I guess they actually
and those records were pristinely kept.
Yes, that was
the British were great at indexing and measuring everything. That was their science focus was understanding the natural world.
Well, you know, the thing is that when you teach science and you teach about the Beagle and you teach about that trip that they took, and we're not talking about the evolutionary part of it, but the detailed information that you know, when I used to teach biological sciences, and especially botany, we used to make the kids draw leaves and other plant parts and so on. We used to make them draw animals and such. But you know, that was one of the big details that came out. It was some of the spectacular drawings in such exquisite detail that were done, plus also the plant materials that were actually pressed in and accounted for as they went around the world. It was the first time that had ever been done in human history, and that was in the 1800s. So, something like that he went around the world. 1840s.
And Paul, you know, once again, you know, anyone who's the word settled science. I mean, I don't know anything that settled science. You know, right now there's a huge debate over Einstein's theory of relativity.
Right.
I mean, you don't sort of in 1895 the U.S. Patent Office made an announcement that all the discoveries. Discoveries had been made, and they would probably be shrinking because, you know, they'd reached the pinnacle of science. And that was 1895.
Well,
foolish people are always saying, you know, we're at the end of history. I love that one.
Right.
You know, we've reached the end of history. It's going to be like this forever.
And, you know, this is exactly – this story about the patent office is just absolutely a classic to relate – to the global warming folks and the climate change folks, and their whole thing about, like Al Gore says, it's always settled science. There's no doubt about it. The debate is over. Science is never settled, ladies and gentlemen.
Well, now,
it never is.
Al Gore did go to graduate school. He went to seminary.
Right.
He lasted for 5 days.
And, you know, the thing is, like I tell people, I'd love to have Al Gore, Jerry Brown, and Barack Obama in my chemistry class or in my biology class. I'd really like to see how they could answer such questions as, what is the element carbon? Tell me about carbon.
Yes, that's that one that there's more than a little of, Paul.
Well, yeah, yeah. And in their world, there's too much of it. But, you know, the problem is there's too much of it in their world, which the world, they don't understand anything about the element carbon. You know, it's kind of interesting. Like I tell the people all the time, I always, not always, but oftentimes when I had kids that I was shaping and molding at the formative times in their instructional lives, I would always ask them a question that gave the answer. And, of course, the element carbon, that is the answer. It is an element found on the periodic table of the elements. But what is the value and importance of it? It's hugely important to organic chemistry, which plays a role, of course, in photosynthesis and the creation of carbohydrates and proteins and foods and all this other good stuff. But this is stuff these people have no idea about, especially guys like Al Gore, who says that because of carbon dioxide and others, that we're getting just absolutely warm to the max on the planet.
Right.
Which, of course, right.
Well,
not,
in my article,
I
also talk, Paul, that you always have these counter-revolutions. You know, you're now, if you're in the European Alps, you're experiencing the heaviest snowfall in 100 years, and they're not done yet. If you're in the Arctic, the polar bear population has consistently increased since Al Gore's movie. In Greenland, the ice sheet grew this year to the sixth highest surface mass on record. I mean, you know, there's obviously a huge, you know, policy difference between, you know, the coastal and inland divide as far as, you know, progressives versus conservatives.
Yeah.
You've managed to have all these people that live on the coastal side, you know, believe in this pseudoscience. Now they're going to live their dream.
Yep.
And I think that's going to be devastating for them.
Hang on, Chris. We got a break coming up. We'll be right back. We're talking to Chris Street about, well, seizing the coast.
He's undoing the UN, one community at a time. It's Paul Preston.
Hello, I'm Mike Lindell, inventor of MyPillow. Thanks to your support, you've helped make MyPillow become one of the fastest-growing companies in America. Over the last 12 years, you've helped MyPillow create thousands of jobs right here in the USA. Every MyPillow is made with passion here in my home state of Minnesota to ensure you get the best sleep of your life.
I've never slept better in my life. What's better than a great night's sleep?
Sleep is one of the most important things to your health, and MyPillow is one of the most important things to your sleep.
Call or go to MyPillow.com now, and Mike will give you two MyPillow premiums for one low price. Use the promo code, and you'll also receive free shipping. That's two MyPillow premiums for one low price.
I tried every pillow from expensive down pillows that just went flat to fiber-fill pillows that rebound every time you move your head. I even tried those memory foam pillows, and the curve did not match my neck, and it probably won't match yours. That's why I invented MyPillow. My patented fill adjusts to your exact individual needs and helps keep your neck supported and aligned.
MyPillow lasts 10 years, is machine washable and dryable, and comes with a 60-day money-back guarantee.
I personally guarantee MyPillow will be the most comfortable pillow you'll ever own or your money back.
Call or go to MyPillow.com now, and Mike will give you two MyPillow premiums for one low price. Use the promo code, and you'll also receive free shipping. That's two MyPillow premiums for one low price.
With our 60-day money-back guarantee, you have nothing to lose.
Sleep well, America!
Call 800-266-4715. That's 800-266-4715, and use the promo code AGENDA. 800-266-4715, promo code AGENDA.
For the best night's sleep in the whole wide world, visit MyPillow.com.
D. Do you have a treasure box of coins, jewelry, silverware? Ever wonder if they have any value? We offer friendly, free, fair appraisals and pay cash on the spot.
Bring them to your local coin shop, Yuba City Coin and Bullion, by the 10th Street Bridge. Always buying and selling gold, silver, and platinum jewelry, U.S. and foreign coins, sterling silverware, placer gold.
It's a great time to make some extra cash and invest in bullion, junk silver, gold and silver ingots, eagles and maple leaves. We specialize in all precious metals. And for you coin collectors,
and for those just starting,
we have a wide selection of type coins and currency. We're PCGS and NGC affiliated. So swing by your local coin shop, Yuba City Coin and Bullion.
438 Colusa Highway by the 10th Street Bridge. Friendly service, fair prices. Yuba City Coin and Bullion. 755 Coin.
And welcome back to Agenda 21 Radio. We're talking to Chris Street here about the California Coastal Commission. They are getting ready to seize 1,100 miles of coastline. But it's worse than that. It could be 20, 30, 40, 50, 100 miles inland in California. Yeah, just in other words, seizing the property. This is the Agenda 21 business in the 2030 agenda that we've been talking about. Chris, I want to go back to the point, because I got a couple of texts here I'm looking at, talking about the coastal elites. Chris said something about Barbara Streisand.
Barbara Streisand, Oprah, Al Gore. You know, they live on this coast that they're trying to make sure that you can't get on. I mean, a lot of these environmental issues are to keep you off the coast, you know, so that that they don't have the distraction of the, you know, the unwashed masses.
Now it says here, you know, in the article, it says, although the California Coastal Commission's draft did not adopt specific retreat guidance, the California Special Districts magazine expects that the CCC, which is the California Coastal Commission, will predict a sea level rise of 2.5 to 5.5 feet and the elimination of 31 to 67% of Southern California beaches by the year 2100.
Right. So, once this is adopted, the local jurisdictions, I love that term, local jurisdictions, whatever that means, have the right to start taking property up to what they believe the impact will be by 2100. So you don't have to have actual, you know, sea level rise. You need the regulatory right to begin the managed retreat.
Okay, so, and for those people who don't understand, you know, coastal life and so on, there's a couple of fundamentals. You have the tides, and it's influenced by the moon. And tides go up and down. You have high tide and you have low tide. You have a high tide mark and you have a low tide mark, and the range in between is known as the intertidal zone. And what Chris is talking about here is that as they look at what they have environmental projections, the pseudoscience, by the way, that we were talking about in the last segment, that it's, you know, science is settled to them, and they know they have absolute science by way of predictors out there and calculations and algorithms. There you go, algorithms that are going to tell them what the high tidal zone is going to be by 2100. And that high tidal zone will be 2 to 5 feet higher than where it currently is now across the board coastally, which in this estimate says they're going to lose anywhere from 31 to 67% of Southern California beaches. But that also means the encroachment into the Central Valley would cover much of the Central Valley, including Sacramento and places like that.
Yeah.
That could be a problem. But
I think it's hilarious. It's absolutely hilarious. Let the left live their dream.
Huh. So Babs is going to lose her house.
Babs? Yeah.
Okay. Al Gore. You're talking.
It's an Al Gore rhythm, Paul. Al Gore rhythm.
Yeah, I know. I almost came out with that little statement just before, yeah. just previously. So,
and you know, it's, and you're going to be subject. You know, you're also going to have the, you know, the continuous drought. The sea level for the Central Valley will fall as the aquifers essentially dry out, right?
Well, sure.
So deserts will be lower, and what, you know, deserts used to be tidal zones. Inland valleys used to be deserts and tidal zones. So you can predict that, you know, most of California eventually is going to be taken.
Yeah, yeah, that's, and again, for those of you that have been wondering about how the one world order globalist people are going to take your property, this is how they're going to do it. First of all, you've got this managed retreat, I guess you can say, in a squeeze of a different sort when you start to take a look at this thing called rewilding, Chris, which is a part of what we hear out of the Department of Fish and Wildlife of California, which means that basically they're going to take people in the rural areas and push them off the rural areas so that animal life can return to what it was 200-300 years ago.
Well, those rural people have the, you know, bad sense to vote their personal interest. You got to put them in stack and pack housing.
Yeah. Okay.
That way you can negate their vote by volume.
But the
illegal aliens aren't illegal aliens. They're population management schemes. Political population management schemes.
Yeah, I'd really like to. I really like to get into that one. Of course, the whole root of this, though, is the California Coastal Commission. And I wanted to kind of get in. It's the California Coastal Commission Act, and we have about 2 minutes by which we can do this. But the California Coastal Commission Act started years ago.
The California Coastal Commission Act has been around for a long time, right?
Right.
I believe it was passed in... I'm going to probably get this wrong, but I believe it was passed about 20 years ago, and I'm checking. Excuse me. It 30. Was an initiative passed in 1972.
Yeah.
Proposition 20.
Yep.
So, you know, it was supposed to be so the beaches are open to everyone. Well, that's pretty, that's a fair thing. And it was supposed to encompass 1.5 million acres of land. It stretches 3 miles to the sea. To an inland boundary and varies by, you know, certain urban areas, including 287 miles of shoreline surrounding 9 offshore islands. This is a moving target now. What it was supposed to be is not what it is today.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I like about things that start out small and, you know, with a worthy cause. I mean, people shouldn't. It was the Malibu progressives that, you know, set up gates and made sure you couldn't get on their beach. You know, you riffraff, you unwashed masses. And now it's, you know, this is boomeranging at them.
Well, you know, one of the things, this is a public resources code, the California Coastal Act, which is different from the proposition that brought it to us back in the 70s. And I mentioned, you know, you mentioned in 1972 to 1976 was really an era in which this is all being brought on board. And that was when I was actually teaching biological sciences and environmental sciences. I think I mentioned it was around that time frame. I said, there's something wrong with this plan. There's really something bad going on here. And they implemented this, and I can remember some of my contractor friends in Southern California at the time being affected by the regulations that were being then turned over to local communities in local California commissions. Now, as I look at this, the California Coastal Act, this seems to be an enhancement of the original Proposition 20 that brought this about.
Well, that was the problem, is that, you know, these things were loosely defined. People thought they knew what the coast was.
Right.
obviously the new people on the Coastal Commission are helping them understand it was much bigger than they thought.
Right, and it became more bureaucratic, and this is one of the things I'm trying to get at, is that here you have a proposition that modifies basically what it does is it modifies the Constitution of California. And this is why it enhances it. Is that
enhances it?
Right, enhances it. Okay, but it adds to it. And again, we've been making the case in New California that the California Constitution has been modified 530 plus times, or enhanced, as Chris would say.
Yeah, now, enhanced. But,
like saying that the U.S. Constitution has been enhanced. 27 times to make amendments to it. Well, compare that now, juxtaposition that with California Constitution, which has been modified well over 530 times. And this is being one of the modifications. And then what they do is they bring out the proposition and then they add on legislation, that bolsters it or it cleans it up or whatever. Prop 13 in California has been one of those propositions as well. And I know, Chris, you know this proposition, which is the proposition that was passed in the 1970s as well. I think 1976 or 7, maybe it was 8, around that time frame, that regulated the amount of property taxes the state and the counties could seize. But then all of a sudden a lot of add-ons came on to Prop 13, which really, in a lot of ways, destroyed the value, the true value, and the pure value of Prop 13. Wouldn't you agree?
Of course. I mean, that was, that was one time that Californians realized, they could be like Michigan. In Michigan, did the auto industry go out and, terrible, economic decline, and the Democrat governor, her answer was raising property taxes from 2% of homeowners' value to 4%. That offset any loss of revenue from declining home values. What a perfect system, right?
Well, it caused the market to crash there, and look what happened to Detroit. They're burning homes and destroying neighborhoods right now because nobody's living in the squalor is so bad.
Well, actually, downtown Detroit's coming back because you have all these, young people
right,
armed to the teeth that are starting entrepreneurial companies down there. Because the property is so cheap.
But, since the 1970s, when all this started, when the decline really started to hit Detroit until now, I mean, it is 2018. And part of that renewal has been because of somebody like Donald Trump being elected as well.
Right, right. I mean, that was, that's the problem that the left has, is that eventually, you run out of other people's money and you start to take most people's money.
Yeah, which is what we're seeing right now in California. And, of course, this Coastal Commission is going to be a squeeze. Okay, Chris, we got about another 30 seconds before the time is up for this hour, which has been, I think, a very, very enlightening hour. We're getting a lot of texts and so on in reaction to this article about the Coastal Commission.
I really hope that your listeners will go on American Thinker and look up this article and, make comments about it. I think it's the most incredible challenge that we face as opportunities we face as New California, because you basically have the left eating its own. They're eating its own money.
Well, they have to now. They have no choice. And like I said, it's of course you have the Brexit thing going on with Theresa May, which is another thing out there that's similar to what we're talking about right now. It's all related. It's all related. Anyway, Chris, tell us how we can get a hold of you.
Just go on to American Thinker. I put an article up at least every other day.
All right. Okay. Well, listen, Chris, thanks a lot for being with us. And great information, as usual, and a great insight for New California.
Thanks, Paul.
Okay. Anyway, thanks for listening to Agenda 21 Radio. It's been absolutely fascinating. To see this now coming up, but we shouldn't expect anything less from California, because they're getting desperate, ladies and gentlemen. They're absolutely getting desperate, and we're not. We're getting more optimistic every single day about what's going on in New California. Anyway, thanks for listening to Agenda 21 Radio. Remember to visit our website, a21r.com, and also newcaliforniastate.com. And remember, stay strong, America. We are exceptional Americans.
warriors sending out an SOS to the last vestiges of freedom, democracy, and the American way of life. Paul Preston with Agenda 21.
Stay tuned for more of Paul Preston's Agenda 21 Radio.
This is AENN, American Exceptionalism News Network.